This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
We begin hour number two of Sharp Money. Joe Serralo, Dave Ross coming at you here from the D in fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada. What a pleasure it always is to welcome back. I like to call him the mayor of Boston. He is Dan Vreeland. You can follow him on X as I do at Gumby Vreeland. Does a great job with the Sports Gambling Podcast, Cage Side Press, host of Top Turtle MMA, and the Gambling Podcast. Dan, great to see you, my friend. You are the hardest working man in MMA. We've got a couple things to get to. One, this weekend, we've got a pretty intriguing main event here with Amanda Lemos against Verna Jandiroba. Jandiroba's been the type of fighter that you and I normally like to back, but do we like her in the favorites role here in the main event, potentially five rounds, or do you look to the Amanda Lemos side here at plus $1.14, maybe a sleeping dog here?
So I am a little bit bummed that she didn't wind up the underdog here. I thought the title challenger, Amanda Lemos, for sure was going to be the favorite. And then the line posted, and obviously it's not what Verna Jandiroba backers like. But with that being said, I'm still having a tough time picking against her here, mostly just because if you watch the beginning of that Amanda Lemos versus Mackenzie Dern fight, Mackenzie Dern had her down very early in the fight. She had her up against the cage. She had tabled the leg. She had made it basically so Amanda Lemos had to ride out the first round on the mat. And not that Mackenzie Dern isn't a great grappler. I think she's a highly rated grappler. She's got great jiu-jitsu, some of the greatest jiu-jitsu in the strawweight division. But I actually don't rate her wrestling all that high. In fact, if you want to go back to her fight with Verna Jandiroba, Jandiroba stuffed all of her takedowns and scored on all of her own. So Jandiroba, I think, has a wrestling advantage here against Amanda Lemos that I think people might even be underrating a little bit in this fight.
So, Dan, when you look at that board that just popped up there on the screen, the closest thing we have to a pick'em this weekend is in that flyweight division between Cody Durden and Bruno Silva. Who gets your edge in that fight?
I love the spot here for Bruno Silva. And he's dipped into being an underdog a couple of times, you know, into the plus money a couple of times during the week. So keep your eye on that line. But I really love this spot for Bruno Silva. And the reason is if you look at Cody Durden's last three losses, every single one of them has come by submission. And not that Bruno Silva doesn't have big hands. And, you know, he obviously won his last fight with a choke, but like, he's known for his hands, but the thing is that when he decides to turn this into a grappling match, or when Cody Durden decides to turn this into a grappling match, he does an exceptional job of taking the back. He does an exceptional job of moving positions to really advantageous ones and sinking in that choke quick. So I think we're going to see Cody Durden really outmatched on the feet here. And if he does try to get that wrestling going, look for him as he gets more and more tired to make a mistake that Bruno Silva can capitalize on.
Dan, it's one of my favorite plays on the board, so it always makes me feel better when you and I are in cahoots here on that one. I love that side for Bruno Silva. I'm curious what you think of Brad Tavares against the Iron Turtle as we have Jung Young Park back in there. I hate to go against the Iron Turtle here, but do you think that Tavares might be live as a dog?
I do think he's live as a dog. I think that's why we're seeing his number shrink down as it gets closer to fight time. I think this is one of those fights that regardless of what side you're on, within 2 minutes of the fight, you might wind up finding yourself feeling really stupid. because if Jung Young Park can get the takedown and he can get it consecutively, or he can get it, you know, with fidelity here, I think he wins this fight super easily, right? If he can regularly score takedowns, he can regularly rack up control time. I think he wins this fight and he doesn't even break a sweat. If he starts failing on those takedowns, Brad Tavares is definitely the better striker. He's definitely faster. So if you're looking at the board from a value perspective, it's hard to say we just need Brad Tavares to stuff a couple of takedowns here and get like, you know, plus 136 on it. There's certainly value there. I would say that if you're looking for Jung Young Park and you like that side, the real move for me, and it's maybe my sleeper play of the week, is to get in on Jung Young Park by submission.
Oh,
it sounds like a crazy one because Brad Tavares has not been submitted, I don't think ever, if I'm not mistaken. But Jung Young Park's last three wins have all come by rear naked choke. Granted, a lot worse competition than Brad Tavares. You know, Dennis Toy Lewin is no Brad Tavares. But he's got three wins in a row by rear naked choke, and it's plus 900 right now for him to go and get a fourth one. I mean, if you're going to play that side, yeah, maybe he grinds him out to a boring decision, but I think the real value there is on the Jung Young Park, the Iron Turtle submission line.
So, Dan, circling back to that Silva play that you love and you seem to think that there's a lot of value on, that's the men's flyweight bout. Over in the women's flyweight division, is there any value in that one between Maverick and Barbosa, or are you going to flip the script on this one a little bit and instead of going for the value play, are you going to ride with a favorite on this one?
I mean, I think the favorite has still got tremendous value here, too. When I saw that Deion Barbosa was going to be the fill-in for Tracy Cortez in this fight, first of all, you automatically give a little bit of a fade to short-notice fighters. Mm-hmm. They're not winning a large percentage of the time. It's only like 38% historically. And so then when you add in the fact that she's not prepared for somebody with the strength of Miranda Maverick. Look, Miranda Maverick, you know, a lot of people touted her as being this high prospect that was going to run up the division, and maybe a little bit of that shine's come off, right? Like if she's only negative 200 or negative 205 up against Deion Barbosa on short notice, clearly some of that shine's gone. But her losses are to Erin Blanchfield and Jasmine Jesuda Vicius. Like, those are no slouches there. Those are really tough losses, and women who do an exceptional job of stuffing the takedown. And I just don't think Deion Barbosa is the same kind of fighter in that way. She herself kind of needs that top control time. She sort of needs that top jujitsu control in order to win fights. And I don't think she's going to have any chance of having that against a wrestler like Miranda Maverick. Now, of course, Maverick's size comes into play here. Barbosa has fought up at bantamweight. You know, Maverick's only 5'3". She's very small. But I still think that's going to be easier for her to get in on the legs. You're going to see her dominate with the wrestling, hit three or four takedowns here and win this one by decision.
All right, Dan, the first fight of the night, it's the other Usman, not Kamaru, that's going to be out there in the heavyweight division here when Muhammad's going to be back out there against Thomas Peterson. And look, we know what the issues are with bigger version of Usman, right? Sometimes it's that cardio. It is juiced heavily to the over 2.5, minus 210. Does that pose a problem for Usman if this fight goes deep into the night?
Yeah, I think it does, 100%. Because Thomas Peterson, you know, he was a highly touted prospect in his own right. He was an LFA champion. He's a guy who regularly gets tons of takedowns, beats up his opponent, ground and pound finishes. He did get a submission on Contender Series, but I think that was kind of an anomaly. And, like, he's got good ground and pound. And I don't know how Muhammad Usman got the nickname The Motor. That's one of the wildest nicknames I've ever heard in my whole life. Because, as you mentioned, it's wild that this guy runs out of gas as frequently as he does.
Oh, man.
And up against a guy with wrestling like Thomas Peterson, as long as Peterson gets to that wrestling early, right, I think he's going to wear down Usman. I mean, to your point, I can't believe it's heavily juiced to the over. I like the under in this play. I like Thomas Peterson KO props, like TKO exhaustion. You know, like it would shock me to see, you know, Muhammad Usman just not answering punches 3 minutes into the second round. I like either of those plays here, and both of them you're getting pretty solid plus money on.
Plus $1.60 for the under 2.5. I love that play because, again, if Usman gets him out of there, it's probably going to be early. And I'm with you. If Peterson gets the wrestling, we might have a small upset here. Peterson, by the way, is plus $1.10. You know, I love Boom Kelleher, but Brian's seen better days inside that octagon. We know that. Any shot against Cody Gibson? We know Cody's more of a volume guy. He's a $2 betting favorite here. The comeback on Boom is plus $1.70. Any shot for the elder statesman in there to get it done?
I really don't think so.
Yeah.
I mean, like, if you look at Cody Gibson's last two fights, and granted, he did lose both of them, they're to a much higher level of competition to Brian Kelleher, at least where Brian Kelleher is now in his career, right? He lost to Brad Katona on the tough finale, mostly just by, like, not being able to control some of the positions late in the fight and eventually giving away that late round. And then with Miles Johns, again, a really good grappler. And that's kind of what it takes to beat this version of Cody Gibson. He's very big for the division. Mm-hmm. His boxing obviously hung up really well against Brad Katona. And I think that in this fight, you know, what Brian Kelleher has to do is he's got to get him out of there early because he's just a guy who at this stage is not taking damage particularly well. He is a guy who's getting hit and he's looking wobbly. He is a guy who's getting taken down and he's giving up his neck. And, you know, to your point, you know, maybe Cody Gibson's a little bit more of a volume striker, but some of those things he was landing on Brad Katona, I mean, were pretty heavy in my eyes in being such a bigger guy than Brian Kelleher. I think all of that bodes really badly for Boom. As much as a fan as I am of his career in general, I think we're at the tail end of it right here.
Dan, we touched on one women's flyweight bout already. I want to look to the other one. What's the play that you love in Carolina's fight?
Oh, I love Luana Carolina in this fight. I used to be a big Lucy Pudilova fan, and no offense to kind of where her career is gone, but like, you know, she just looks like she's unable to get the best parts of her game going. You know, like what we liked from her in her first stint in the UFC was that she was violent. She'd go in there and throw down. She'd make it messy. And now she kind of gets in the clinch and she seems a little hesitant, or she gets outworked in the clinch. And that's really always where she's done her best work, is in super close range and in the clinch. And now she just happens to be fighting somebody who I think is far better in a lot of those ways, right? Luana Carolina. You don't want to be in the clinch with Luana Carolina. She throws knees to the body really well. She throws nice elbows on the inside. You don't really want to be in striking range. You want to turn her fight into a slow grappling match, right? That's how Ariane Lipsky wound up beating her. And instead, I don't think Lucy Pudilova is capable of winning that kind of fight. Even coming back down to 125 pounds, I don't think this is a fight where she can sort of size bully Luana Carolina. She's also really big. She stuffed takedowns from Lupita Godinez. If she's going to stuff those takedowns, I don't know that Lucy's got all that much of a hope in turning it into that kind of fight. So I like Luana Carolina quite a bit on the feet here.
Only about 30 seconds ago, Dan, we're going back over to the O2 next week main event. We got Leon Rocky Edwards defending against, remember the name, Bilal Muhammad, Chicago's finest. Potentially, do you see an upset happening?
I do see an upset happening here. I love Bilal Muhammad in this spot. I know obviously the first fight we were kind of, we didn't really get to see much and it looked like Liam was getting the best of him. But look, what we've seen in improvements from Bilal Muhammad lately is insane. Hands are going, power's coming around, wrestling's happening. I see the upset coming.
And new might be happening next week. Dan, you're the best. Thanks for hopping on the Progressive Guest Line. We'll catch up again soon, my friend.
Thanks, Dan.
Great stuff, as always, from Dan Vreeland. When we come back, let's talk a little bit more Major League Baseball. That is next here on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Get ready to win big this NFL season with a VSIN Pro subscription. Sign up now for our football special before the end of July and get full VSIN Pro access from now through the Super Bowl for an early bird discount of just $175. That saves you nearly 50% off the monthly price. With VSIN Pro, you're going to gain access to daily best bets, exclusive betting splits data, proven betting systems and analysis from professional handicappers, 24/7 video content, and our all-new special edition betting guides. With the NFL betting guide, it's packed with detailed team, division, conference analysis, plus season win totals, features, props, and awards, and best bets. Our expert insights and in-depth coverage are going to keep you informed and help you make smarter bets throughout the entire season. So don't wait. Sign up before the end of July and get full VSIN Pro access through the Super Bowl for an early bird discount of just $175. Sign up now at VSIN.com/subscribe. That's VSIN.com/subscribe. Back alongside Joe Serralo, Dave Ross here. We are at the D in fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada. We just saw the superstar Mike Palm himself right here at the D. You never know who you're going to see when you come out to the D. So come on down and say hi.
Very true.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, could have been walking over to tell me it's my last show. That's what I thought was going to happen.
Heavy hitters everywhere, people. That's what we're talking about. Heavy hitters in Major League Baseball, obviously, when we're talking about the awards market, looking for the best of the best. I want to start off with the Manager of the Year. I feel like this is one of those awards that might get slept on a little bit because we always look to Cy Young. We look to MVP. Mm-hmm. And sometimes you look at Managers of the Year and you go, oh, Pat Murphy is the short betting favorite at even money to win the award. Rob Thompson of the Phils is plus $1.30. Hey, Carlos Mendoza, 16-1 right there. METS, Mets. Let's go. You look at Marmol in St. Louis at 18-1. Schilt's done a really good job, I think, for the most part at 18-1 in San Diego, resurrecting his career. And Derek Shelton, how about that? 60-1 in Pittsburgh. What number, if any, feel playable to you?
Shelton at 60-1 right really? There feels pretty playable. Yeah, I mean, and you know, you'll have time on this one to see the direction. I wouldn't do this pre-trade deadline, see which direction Pittsburgh goes in. What's tough is that Pat Murphy, right, he's probably going to win this if Milwaukee holds on to that division lead, which I think is very realistic. I mean, it's not that I love Milwaukee. I really dislike the St. Louis Cardinals, so I don't see them catching the Brewers. And then, you know, with everything about David Stearns leaving and Craig Counsell ditching them for division rival Chicago right. Cubs and selling Corbin Burns to Baltimore, it would be really incredible if Milwaukee won that division in a year. I believe the consensus had them in fourth place.
No doubt.
Behind Chicago, behind Cincinnati. So Murphy's probably going to win this award. But if the Pirates make the playoffs,
well,
how do you not give this to Shelton? Like, if you're looking for numbers, Shelton at 60-1 is a different way to essentially bet Pittsburgh to make the postseason, and I think a way better way to play that.
No question. Now, here's the question I have for you. If the Brewers win the division, mm-hmm. right, and the Pirates make the postseason, I mean, I'd still rather have the Shelton 60-1 ticket than an even money ticket at this stage.
Right.
Right. Like, if you wanted Pat Murphy, I think you get that before the season. I would not have forecasted that at the beginning of the year. So if those two things happen, which one do you think? Cause man, if the Buccos make the playoffs, that feels like that would be the buzz. I'm almost guessing that the Shelton 60-1 ticket would have almost an equal value chance than the Murphy at even money ticket if the Brewers now hold on to win the division.
Yeah, I mean, it would be like a trickle-down effect from Paul Skeens and all of the media hysteria and
That's
sensation
right.
that Skeens brings to Pittsburgh. So I'd much rather have that Shelton ticket if both of those things happen. I mean, go figure that the small market Pittsburgh Pirates, not that Pittsburgh is the tiniest market. I mean, right, everyone who follows football knows that the Pittsburgh Steelers are one of the biggest brands in the sport,
mm-hmm.
but the Pirates sure operate like a small market team. And go figure that they are the center of media in a year where the Yankees have one of the best records in baseball. And I mean, you know, with the Dodgers, they've got Ohtani, but
yep.
they've been disappointing. More people care about the Pirates right now than the Dodgers.
I look at Mendoza, our guy there for LGM in New York City at 16-1.
It's enticing for sure.
It is. But what does it take to get there? Like, we're talking about Shelton, the Pirates. Pretty much, if you want to cash that ticket, they've got to make the postseason for that to be live, right? For Murphy to cash, they've got to hold on and win the Central. So I'm looking now and say Mendoza at 16-1. Is it just good enough that the Mets make the playoffs that he's actually in consideration at 16-1? Or do they have to make a ridiculous run, maybe finish second, usurp Wyatt's Braves, and then that ticket's live at 16-1?
So I think Mendoza has a better shot, has a good shot, I'd say a realistic shot of finishing higher than Thompson in the final voting. I don't love that Thompson number because his team was in the World Series 2 years ago. They were in the NLCS last year. When you establish consistency,
sure.
There's less value to win the Manager of the Year award. I would say that what Mendoza would need, I think him to finish top three is very live, right? They announced the week before the awards are handed out, like, hey, here are the finalists. Mendoza, if the Mets make the playoffs, will certainly be a finalist, but he would need Pittsburgh to miss the playoffs.
Yep.
Okay, that's realistic.
Okay.
And a Milwaukee collapse, and that's less realistic because as long as Milwaukee wins that division and Pittsburgh misses the playoffs, it's a slam dunk Pat Murphy. But if Milwaukee collapsed, and by collapse, I don't mean miss the playoffs outright, I mean that they don't win the division, then Mendoza would be live.
16-1 for Carlos if those things could happen. Again, you have
a lot of ifs.
And again, you have to walk down those pathways, though. Like, how does this ticket cash? And I think that's really an astute observation of how those tickets potentially. But again, Shelton, but Bucko's got to make it. Murphy, Brewers have to win that division. And maybe the Mets can't run down the Phillies, but maybe you get into some of those other scenarios we broke down. That could be live at 16-1. In the American League, I wonder if it's a little bit more cut, clear cut, because Stephen Vogt right now is minus $1.50 to win that award. Alex Cora, look, I'm really surprised what Boston has done. Plus 235. I know we don't take them seriously in the AL East, but I wonder right there with the top two, because then you see the demarcation line down to 9-1 to get to Kansas City and Brandon Hyde at 16-1 because the expectations for the O's. If the Sox win a playoff spot, that's it. Forget about winning the division. But if the Sox get at least a wild card, does that get it over vote? Does that get the vote over vote if the Guardians do, in fact, win their division?
This is a trickier one because Cleveland, you know, I mean, and I think that we've been very low on them in this show.
We have.
They're making the playoffs, and they're probably winning the division. So to go from, I know they didn't have the worst record in baseball a year ago, but to go from the number one pick to winning the division, that's a heck of a turnaround. Even though they didn't have the worst record to warrant that number one pick, they were still bottom 10,
sure.
right? And they came into this season, to put this into perspective, coming into this season, the Guardians and the Marlins had the same percentage chance to make the playoffs. Where are the Marlins now?
Mm.
So it's going to be really tough to get past Stephen Vogt in this award. I think if anyone could do it, it's his fellow AL Central guy, Matt Quatraro, because if the Royals – now there's talk about, you know, if the Red Sox get into the playoffs – how about if the Royals get into the playoffs? They were a year away. People liked some spunky offseason moves, getting some starting pitching going. Lineup still stinks. Kansas City and Seattle, you see Scott Servais on that board. The lineups are dreadful, and really the only thing holding those two teams back. But much like Seattle, Kansas City's gotten great pitching. And if they sneak into a playoff spot, I think Quatraro could overtake Vogt. And at 9-1, that's a really enticing number.
The long shots here, Hyde in Baltimore, 16-1. Baldelli, yo, Rocco! 18-1 for Rock there in Minnesota. And Scott Servais is 25-1 in Seattle. But it almost feels a little bit unfair to Servais. I know the offense has not been what Seattle expects. But right now, they still are in first place in the AL West. Is it enough if they win the division? Is that enough to get Servais into that winner's circle?
Not if Cleveland also wins the division. Yeah. Not if Cleveland also does.
That X's amount.
Right, and no one's looking at Seattle right now thinking that they have a game lead in their division. The talk about Seattle, everyone, you'd think that they fell into fourth place. Everyone's already, and I think prematurely, because let the trade deadline play out first. Sure. But everyone's anointing the Houston Astros AL West champs already. Brandon Hyde, that's an intriguing number at 16-1. Not to bet him, but it's intriguing to me because why is Rob Thompson plus 130? If Brandon Hyde is 16-1. Now, maybe it's because the Phillies have the best record and they were still viewed as like a four seed coming right into the year. Maybe that's why. But to me, like I said, postseason success, a pennant 2 years ago, NLCS appearance last year. Like, no one should be that shocked the Phillies are where they are. So for Hyde's number to be 16-1, yet Thompson plus 130, I would think Thompson would be further down the board just like Hyde is, because now the Orioles are no longer a feel-good story. Now it's expected.
And again, that has to be, obviously, for Hyde to cash that ticket, even contemplate cashing that 16-1, they've got to be the number one seed in the AL. Not just win the East.
Oh, yeah.
They can't let the Guardians get that, because that's going to go, obviously, to Vogt with the short number there at minus $1.50. So if the O's get the number one seed, and they are the story at the end of the year in the American League, like, wow, the Orioles, number one seed, beat the Yankees to win the division, held off everybody else. Could that ticket go then at 16-1?
Still so hard. No, because I think that even if Cleveland collapses, if Cleveland gets the two seed, it's probably Vogt. And if they collapse to the extent that Minnesota gets the two seed,
wow,
I think the better play would be Baldelli at 18-1 over Hyde at 16-1, just because the Orioles are now, and you would have never guessed this 3 years ago, but now this is expected of the Orioles, because weren't they the number one seed last year? So now to do it again, it'd be like, all right, well, they did it back-to-back years, but the Twins, no one saw them getting the two seed, so I think Vogt or Baldelli would probably have the edge over Hyde.
Yo, Rocco, tell me about the stuff in the basement. We're going to give our top five movies a little bit later on, and I wonder if that is a precursor of things we might hear later on in the program. Okay, when we come back, stages of grief, how about stages of elimination in Major League Baseball? We'll discuss when your team's going to go out. That's next here on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Back here on Sharp Money, Dave Ross, Joe Serrallo coming at you here from the deep in fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada. Before we get to those stages of grief and elimination for our favorite baseball teams out there where we think they might be out in the postseason, let's get back to one other interesting market. Now, the American League for AL closer of the year, reliever of the year, it looks like Emmanuel Clase. I mean,
he's in a class of his own. He is unbelievable.
You're not even in my class. He is he absolutely looks like a lock barring injury that he's going to be able to win that award. The National League is where it gets a little bit tricky. And we've been talking about it a little bit, Joe, too. You almost have to handicap what guys might be on the move. And they could go into the other league and then more than likely maybe not available for this award. You've got some long shots you actually like here.
Right, and the trade deadline's a big part of handicapping this award, because if you're out of it and you've got a great closer, I'd say at today's point where we are in baseball, there's a 90% chance that guy's getting dealt.
Right.
So you look at the board right now, and what I don't understand is that Ryan Helsley is an odds-on favorite. Ooh. You have to lay money on Ryan Helsley. And yes, he's the NL leader in saves, far and away. He's got 7 more saves than Kyle Finnegan, the next man up. But saves don't tell the full story, right? They don't win you this award in and of themselves.
Mm-hmm.
So when you look at that board, To me, Robert Suarez is dangerous. The value is just not there for me to play Suarez. But there's three guys that I would actually put a sprinkle on, and two of them are going to be traded. Kyle Finnegan at 9-1, who's third on that board. Then you go down a little bit, and there's two guys I like at 25-1, and it's Tanner Scott, the Marlins' lone rep in the All-Star game. He's been sensational this year. Now, Finnegan and Scott at 9 and 25-1, respectively, those numbers should get much shorter August 1st. If they get traded to a National League team.
Yep.
So right now, what you're trying to do is make a value play. It's a gamble because they go American League, then you lose the bet July 30th.
Mm-hmm.
But if they get traded to a National League team, those numbers are going to get shorter because they're having great years. And then the third guy, we know his brother very well.
Yes.
Tyler McGill. I've sat with his family at Mets Angels games before. They're a great bunch. Well, how about his relative, his brother, Trevor?
He's been great.
Got thrown into the closer role in Milwaukee. Was not supposed to be the closer there preseason. And he has done a tremendous job for the Brew Crew. ERA is a hair over two. He's got 18 saves. More Ks per nine than Helsley. Go figure that one. So when you look at Finnegan, Scott, McGill, right? Don't just look at saves. All three of those guys have considerably lower whips. I mean like 0.15 lower than Helsley. Two of them have more Ks per nine than Helsley. Two of them have higher WARs than Helsley. Mm. Tanner Scott at 25-1 is my favorite. If he stays in the National League, his WAR is double Helsley, almost. Helsley 1.5, Scott 2.8, the highest WAR among relievers in the National League. So to me, Tanner Scott, if he stays in the National League, should be the favorite. But Finnegan, Scott, McGill, I like all those guys for a little sprinkle.
They used to call this the Fireman of the Year Award right back in the day, like who's going to put out those fires. And I remember like Lee Smith on bad Cubs teams. He would always be up for the award. To that point, Marlins aren't very good. If Tanner Scott stays, but his numbers are still good enough. Like
that WAR is high, man.
Right. So like if that is still there on a bad team, can he still win that award at 25-1?
It's going to be much harder. It's going to be much more difficult.
You'd rather he got traded to get more run, if you will, with a contending team in the National League.
I mean, you know, like if Scott got traded to our Mets, right?
He wouldn't
be the closer, so he wouldn't have the save numbers. But he'd be inserted in an eighth inning role, which I think nowadays saves are valued tremendously less than they were in the past. Kind of like, you know, RBIs or batting average, right? They're not valued the same. So if he became even an eighth inning guy on a contending team and was still lights out and still had the high WAR, I think he'd be very live.
I got a question. You were talking, actually two things. One, I noticed you omitted my guy, Raisel Iglesias.
Yes, he did.
A little biased on that one.
Yeah, 7.5 Ks per nine doesn't move the needle that much for me.
Yeah, but he's...
Take that.
He's just got straight gas, man. He saves left and right.
Low WAR, the whip is the best thing in his favor. 0.79. But low WAR, low Ks per nine. I think everyone, when Iglesias comes out to pitch, is like, all right, is this finally the one that he's going to get lit up and blow it?
Mm.
I don't think he's a great rep around the league, so I'd probably look over him. But, I mean, the odds makers haven't looked over him, 12-1.
I don't feel like he's going to get blown up every time he comes in. But, anywho, with Trevor Megill, you were mentioning the saves with the Brewers.
Mm-hmm.
Any concern if Devin Williams comes back and they put Devin Williams in the closer spot?
I don't know if they do that. If Williams comes back. I mean, look, Williams has made a career as the eighth inning guy because he had Josh Hader there for so long. I think with McGill being in a role in this spot, if he struggled, I could see him having a shorter leash as the closer. But I don't think Williams, as great as he is coming back from injury, automatically gets him the closer spot yet this year. Maybe he gets him an open competition next year, but McGill is grooving in that closer role, so you got to keep him there.
We are hoping as Metropolitan backers that they do make a move for a guy like a Tanner Scott to put him in that eighth inning role and show Diaz returns to his form. That would eliminate some of these stages of grief and elimination for our Metropolitans in the National League. Now, what's interesting here, if you think the Mets are going to just not make the postseason, you got to lay $1.60, which is very interesting.
That's wild.
Isn't that interesting?
That is crazy to me.
Like, people are now believing that the Metropolitans are going to make the playoffs. I am one of those people, but again, trade deadline next 2 weeks is going to be very important for Uncle Steve to buy a little bit, maybe even a guy like Tanner Scott, like we were talking about. To lose in the wild card round, you can get plus money at that. How about they make it to the divisional series? Then we're getting excited in New York. Plus 650. Could they get to the LCS and then lose at 16-1? Oh, my God. They get to the World Series. 40-1 just to be a runner-up. And look how short those numbers are now. 55-1. You could have gotten that, Joe, about a month ago.
Triple digits, right?
And I did at 125-1.
Oh, baby.
So I did play that on principle alone at 125-1. They've been shorted mightily down to 55-1. Let's be realistic. when are we crying in our beer over the stage of elimination?
No, I can't answer that question because, no, look at 2015, right? Now, I'm not saying that this is another 2015. Maybe 2025 could be. I don't know if we're there yet right now. But look at what happened in 2015, right? The Mets were 500 on deadline day. The Nationals come into town. We fell out of it. We were three games behind the Nats.
Oh, my God.
We make the deals. And now it's interesting because this is a slight tangent. But Wyatt, you were mentioning before that the guys the Braves got in their World Series run, they didn't go for the big fish, but they added pieces like Eddie Rosario, Jock Peterson. Prior to Cespedes, the Mets had done the same thing.
That's
Juan Uribe and Kelly Johnson were huge acquisitions on that 2015 team. But the Mets were 500 on deadline day. They're in a better position now than they were in 2015. They got to the playoffs, albeit they were the three seed because they won the division. But they got there with the worst regular season record of any of the then five playoff teams in the National League. The wild cards, Cubs Pirates, had 98-97 wins that year. The Mets had 90. The Dodgers had 92. So anything can happen once you're there. If we, I would say plus 280 to losing the wild card series is probably, I would say, some good realistic value. Like, I think the Mets make the playoffs, and then if they get the five seed, they'd obviously be underdogs to the Atlanta Braves with the four seed. So I think that that's some good value on a realistic play. But, oh, man, I mean, if they were to get the six seed, I like them against Milwaukee. I might even like them against Atlanta in a payback spot for 2022.
Take that, Wyatt. Yeah. I'm with you there, Joe. It's I really am. I like that idea. Again, Kodai Senga, Met fans are waiting for him to come back. We hope that the ghost splitter looks like he looked before he got injured. He's been out the entire year.
Oh, yeah.
We talked about maybe a Max Scherzer deal. Maybe even if it's not Max, another frontline starter potentially to help bolster this rotation. And then I think the Mets are very live. And then you get in those short series. Lineup's pretty good.
Anything can happen.
Absolutely.
The lineup is the most intriguing part about this team right now. The Mets were always known for winning with pitching, right?
Yep.
2015, they ran out a young but talented rotation in the postseason.
Syndergaard, DeGrom.
Harvey, Noah, DeGrom, Matz. That was Matz's best year as rookie year in 2015.
Yep.
So now the pitching's a bit of a question mark, but they're, what, seventh in baseball in OPS in the first half?
They're hitting.
Vientos, Alvarez. That lineup's deep. I mean, Harrison Bader's doing a great job in that nine spot.
Absolutely.
Of flipping it over to the top. Jose Iglesias at the bottom of the lineup. Like, it's a really deep, talented, scary lineup. As far as depth, I mean, the bottom of the Mets lineup is way scarier than that of the Yankees or the Dodgers when you get past the five spot.
I think the Pirates would be the one team that a lot of people would not want to play in a short series because of the front line starting pitching. Mm-hmm. Obviously, when you have a Skeens and a Jones that you can throw out there as potentially a 1-2. But the Mets, if they do upgrade, again, that's why the next 2 weeks coming back from the break are so important. If you're playing any of these longer shots here for the Metropolitans, because the way they're currently constructed, the pitching would not get us home, right? They need another
Senga.
Yep.
And then you need another, maybe not another ace. Some people are being a little like Wrecker the other day came on and said that he thinks they would need another ace. I think you can go get another two or three. And with, you know, Severino
what,
and
what is
Manaea.
Big Sev? Is Big Sev a two or a three?
Depends which day you get him. Because he's had many games lately where he looks like a one, and
sure.
Then he's had others where it's like, okay, he'd be a three. But you mentioned the Pirates, and what's intriguing there is if you, I mean, took him to miss the playoffs, you're laying 650, that's a lot. But if they get in there.
Oh, boy.
Where do they go from there? Do you take two tickets on them to lose the divisional series and the LCS because they're so constructed to win a wild card series? If they were the sixth seed, I'm taking them against Milwaukee.
Yeah, I mean, look at that divisional series price at 14-1. That might be where I look for the Pirates.
Even the
to
LCS.
Get out, right? It could happen with that pitching staff, that's for sure.
Wow.
Let's continue this conversation here and maybe stay in the National League because Dodger fans, you might not want to listen. No, do listen. That's coming up next here on Sharp Money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
You wake up, you make some coffee, you check out VSiN.com. Make it part of your daily routine to get your best bets, betting splits, exclusive articles, odds by state. They vary across the country. Betting tools, betting guides, they are there for you each and every day at VSiN.com. Back alongside Joe Serrallo, Dave Ross here as we continue from the D in fabulous Las Vegas, Nevada. We were talking about stages of grief. I get, because I'm older and we're both Met fans, I've just had, I got more scar tissue. Like, I am old enough to have enjoyed 1986.
Wow.
And winning that championship as a high schooler. And it still has, all these years later, it's galvanized me against bad Met losses in the postseason.
You might want to kill me for this. Have you lived through both World Series?
I was born in 69.
Before the World Series?
Well, October 26th. So I'd have to go back and
look. That's your birthday?
Yeah.
You and my sister have the same birthday. That's awesome.
I'd have to go back and take a look. When did the Mets actually clinch the 1969 World Series? Could have coincided.
It was five games, right?
Yeah. It's very close to my birthday. It would make a lot of sense why I am the way I am. Right. So maybe the stages of grief are not as bad for me, because people are like, oh, that must suck being a Met fan. I'm like, no, like, I don't get to claim 69 because right. I was zero or maybe just barely.
October 16th.
Ah,
wow. Things were so much earlier. They were done so much earlier back then.
Which, by the way, is my mom's birthday. And then 10 days later, here I come.
Oh, so, there you go.
But I think Dodger fans somehow feel like, even though they got the COVID chip, they feel like they haven't won it enough.
Yeah, that was a Mickey Mouse World Series.
Yeah, that doesn't count,
that,
does it?
The Lakers in the bubble.
Do they count that in L.A.? You know California. I mean, is that like a big, like, they're all, yeah,
they
beat our chest about the 2020.
They do count it.
They do.
They think the Dodgers are God's gift to the world. No, I don't count that. 60-game regular season, that's a sprint, not a marathon. What's the Dodgers' problem? They can't last 170 games. That's their problem. So don't tell me what they did in a 60-game season.
Yeah, that NLCS when the Braves blew a 3-1. The series lead to the Dodgers, that didn't count at all.
Big asterisk, LA. LeBron gets it, Dodgers get it as well.
Don't forget, we almost had a 3-0 comeback.
That was the Astros race.
The Rays were up 3-0.
That's right.
That was wild.
So the Dodgers this year for stages of grief for their elimination, could you imagine if they missed the playoffs? It's not going to happen. 25-1 if you really think somehow it's going to be a complete collapse. Now look.
That would be great.
They do have issues. I mean, like, I thought that before the year, the Braves, and we saw those win totals over 100, right? For the Braves and the Dodgers, they look like super teams. They did look like all-star teams. And you went, they're almost like the Titanic, right? The ship that can't sink. And then you see the injuries both those teams have had, and they've taken on water. Now, I don't know that the hull is going all the way down to crush the ship, but if the Dodgers are going to make moves before the trade deadline, right, Joe? So we have to take that into factor. I don't know what those moves exactly will look like. Max Scherzer again.
They're in on Garrett Crochet.
There you go. So they're looking for a big-time Hessian to get them some hired help to help win this war. Now, to go ahead, Wyatt.
Well, I was going
to
say, so you know how the Dodgers, everybody's hurt. They need all these players. I saw somebody tweet out that Scooble would be a great pickup for them, and somebody quote tweeted, it's like, oh, so your $1.3 billion you spent in the offseason, is it enough?
Yeah.
I mean, that's what you do when you're just the cap be damned, and you just say, hey, we're going to buy, and we're going to get that ring. I mean, when you've made the investments they already have, it does seem kind of foolish to not make more investments now. Because you're pot committed.
What's crazy is we're talking about Garrett Crochet and Tarek Skubal, and it's like, what do the Dodgers have? In a perfect world, if they were healthy, you've got Tony Gonsolin, Dustin May, Walker Buehler, Clayton Kershaw, Bobby Miller, who I just can't figure out how he's not good with the stuff he possesses, Gavin Stone, Tyler Glasnow.
It's an
Yamamoto.
Embarrassment.
It's an embarrassment
of riches.
And then Shohei's got to come back.
They've got two full rotations, and they can't keep it.
And they need more. That's the crazy part.
They don't have enough. Forget a regular season five-manner. They don't have enough for a short series rotation right now. It's nuts.
Insane. So to lose in the wild card round, by the way, it seems preposterous that they wouldn't win the division.
Right, they should have the bye.
So we would think they would get the bye and would not be eligible for that. That's why it's plus 850.
Imagine if Milwaukee stole the bye from them.
Oh, my God.
And we got Dodgers, Pirates, and a 3-6 seed, and Skeens goes out there and puts the Pirates up 1-0.
Let's go Pittsburgh. Now, here's where it gets interesting. To lose in the divisional series, wasn't that your claim?
Yes.
That's what you thought would happen.
That price stinks. Everyone's thinking like me, apparently.
Plus $1.75. Okay, to get to the LCS but lose it, you can get 3-1. To get to the World Series and lose it, you can get 5-1. If you think they can win the whole damn thing, you can get plus money. Not great plus money, but you can get over $3 if you think the Dodgers can win the World Series and there's no stage of grief and or elimination.
None of these are good enough numbers for me to play. I mean, all of those, like, I hate those. I detest those numbers because I don't think they make it to the World Series. but I'm not even confident to say that they make it to the LCS, and that's only 3-1. Like, my favorite play in terms of just a prediction and not an actual bet is the Dodgers to lose in the divisional series. But at less than 2-1, that's a terrible number. There is no value at that number at all, so there's nothing to play here, in my opinion, when it comes to the Dodgers.
I tend to agree. I don't find any playable numbers that we just look at and go, yeah, that's good value there, because, again, we know they're going to get more, we believe, arms before the trade deadline here in a couple weeks. Let's get over to the American League. Let's talk about the evil empire, New York Yankees, the other pinstripes in New York City. Don't like them very much. But again, this is another team that you look at and you go, well, they're it's certainly not a lock when you're a game down to Baltimore to win the AL East. To miss the postseason completely, 20-1. Look, we've seen the Yankees last year, second half collapse. I mean, this has happened to them
so many
in
things
recent
would need to happen, though. Like, so many teams that have incredibly gigantic question marks would have to jump them. The Red Sox, the Royals, and
Minnesota,
probably the Mariners.
Minnesota, maybe.
Well, they're making the play. I already account for Minnesota to get a wild card spot. So you're talking about two others, and you're talking about the Royals, Sox, and Mariners, or Astros. I don't want to discount the Mariners for the division, but, like, that's a lot of teams to jump the Yankees. I think they're going to the playoffs.
So to lose in the wild card round as a wild card, if the Orioles do in fact win the AL East, look at that, almost get 4-1, that they go out early. Now look.
In a 4-5?
Yeah. I mean, Gerrit Cole's your ace. You hope he's still healthy.
But if they get Minnesota, does them being 6-0 against Minnesota this year and
Minnesota can't beat them. Minnesota just cannot beat the Yankees.
I'm going to look up the Yankees record.
It's insane.
In my lifetime. Since June 19th, 98, I'm going to look that up.
While you're looking that up, and you look at these other numbers, if they can get out of the wild card series, losing the divisional round, hey, maybe they win the division. They're already in the divisional series, potentially. That'd be plus $1.65. That could be a one and done scenario, right? You win the East, but then you have too much rest. We've talked about that.
Right.
Who does it really help? To get to the LCS and lose plus +370, to get to the series and lose 6-1, and then all those long-suffering Yankee fans to win it all plus +550. Any playable numbers in your estimation?
Nothing is that playable, because I have a lot of conviction that the Yankees are going to lose similarly to the Dodgers in the divisional round. Mm. And the books seem to be in sync with me on that one. Dodgers plus +175, Yanks plus +165. Those aren't good enough numbers for me to make a play that specific, because that's what I really think, whether they are the one seed or the four seed, I think the Yankees lose in the divisional round. Although I will say, if they're the one seed, that means that they get incredibly hot down the stretch here, and then maybe they don't. Losing the divisional round, because that means that something clicks, whether it's their lineup's deeper or their starting pitching is better, because those guys have almost entirely regressed from April. That would mean something clicked. But I think the most realistic path, what I'm calling for here, is a four seed, probably winning the first round, and then going out in the ALDS.
Here's the way I look at the Yanks is, you know, back in the day when George was running the operation, a guy like Brian Cashman wouldn't have to think twice about, hey, boss, can I spend some money? Because the answer was always yes.
Right.
Now it's been like last, you got to work on a budget, which is insane. Look, Soto, we don't know what's going to happen with Juan next year. I know across town, the Metropolitan fans feel like that's what Uncle Steve is saving for.
I'm not as confident as many people are.
Well, then my question would be this. If Soto is on the move at the end of the year for the Yankees, if he's really just a rental, then don't you have to go all in now while you have Juan Soto?
You would think, unless they're really cocky and they think he's a sure thing to come back. I think Juan Soto is going to be in New York next year.
Yeah, we just
don't
know.
It's just a matter of which team. I think
he loves
New York. You know, I mean, it is true. Dominican guys love New York.
They do.
You feel more, you know, there was all the question about Shohei Ohtani, right, when he was coming over from Japan, like where he'd feel comfortable. What place has more Dominicans than New York? You know, I mean, they do tend to feel comfortable there. Jose Reyes was on top of the town, you know?
Well, you want a Cespedes when his walk-up music. I mean,
Cespedes is Cuban.
He's Cuban. That's correct. But, like, we just, it seems like in New York City, that is a good spot.
Absolutely.
So I think Soto would want to be there one way or the other, whether it's the Mets or the Yankees.
I think it's coming down to those two. By the way, really quick, the Yankees, since June 19th, 1998, against Minnesota, they've played 180 games. 123-57.
I just don't want to see that for the Twins set. I do not want to see that matchup.
What is that winning percentage? I mean, it's more than a full season. 123. That's a 683 winning percentage.
Win Twins, except when they play the Yankees. That's when they do not win in the Twin Cities.
Wild.
Okay, when we come back to begin hour number three, we're going to switch our attention a little bit and get back to some NFL talk, maybe the number one seeds in the AFC and some numbers associated there. And, of course, we'll do the NFC as well. That is hour number three coming up here on Sharp Money.